You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Wednesday, December 24th, episode 3847. Merry Christmas, Horse World!
We wish you a horsey Christmas, we wish you a horsey Christmas, we wish you a horsey Christmas from us at HRN. We wish you a horsey Christmas, we wish you a horsey Christmas, we wish you a horsey Christmas from us at HRN. It's holiday week with Jamie and Glenn. Good prizes for Christmas and comedians. We wish you a horsey Christmas. We wish you a horsey Christmas. We wish you a horsey Christmas. From us at HRN.
Thanks for stopping by today. Jamie and I are off to the new year, but don't worry, we have some fun episodes planned for you, including this one. Today, our friend Ashley from Sleep Stories for Equestrians prepares a holiday special for you, something soothing to put on while you have a hectic day in preparation for Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. Have a great few days, everybody. Jamie and I wish you, your family, and your four-legged kids a wonderful, happy holiday free of vet visits. Also, before we get to Ashley, I have a poem for you from Auditor Shannon that I've been saving for Christmas Eve. Thanks, Shannon.
Hey, this is Shannon calling in with another holiday poem. This one is about my own horses, called The Great Christmas Snack Caper. The stable was quiet, the moon shining bright, but five hungry horses dreamt through the night. Not of carrots or hay, though they liked those a lot, but of sugary gifts from a great Christmas pot. Woody the gelding dreamt big and dreamt sweet, of molasses-filled cookies, a holiday treat. He pictured them stacked, reaching up to his knee. I'd eat them all quickly, just watch and you'll see. Seven, the nervous, had a simpler peer need, a peppermint garland, a horse's best feed. She imagined the crunch, the cool, sweet blast. A nervous old thoroughbred must eat really fast. So be the mare, with her exquisite good taste, demanded expensive things, nothing in haste. She dreamt of a mash, warm gently and slow, with apples imported from a far sunny glow. And please, she mentally hushed with a flick of her tail, ensure that the grain is served in a silver pail. Young Charlie the relaxed, the sweet-tempered bay, just wanted a handful of treats every day. He dreamt of the feed bag left open and wide, where the owner's best handfuls could no longer hide. He'd sneak in a nibble, then step back with delight. I'm a good boy, I promise, I just need one bite. And what of old Chase, the magnificent gray? He dreamt of the quiet, the end of the fray. But if he must snack, well, he'll only agree to the crispy of carrots sliced perfectly. He'd chew them with dignity, slow and refined, to the best Christmas treat for a gentle old mind. So here's to the horses, the bays and the gray. May their stockings be full on this fine Christmas day.
Before we get to Ashley, remember you can still get a State Line Tack gift certificate. It is a horse husband approved gift. Hop on over to statelinetack.com and you'll see the gift certificate banner there on the page. Just click on that and you can get the horse person in your life something that they will absolutely love because they can get whatever they want. You don't have to pick out for them. That's why gift certificates are always horse husband approved. And you can also mention it to your horse husband for him to get you one. Either way, it works out for us. And we thank State Line Tack for their continued support of the Horses in the Morning show for 15 years. Really appreciate it, State Line Tack. Now, enjoy the amazing Ashley with something she calls Santa's Pony.
Santa Claus's Pony by Ella F. Mosby. It was a little town in Belgium. There were storks' nests on the high red roofs to which the children pointed as they pattered by in their little wooden shoes, and there were small carts drawn by the strong draft dogs of Flemish breed, looking at their owners with patient, faithful eyes. There were old churches and houses, telling a story in wood or stone to every passerby. In one of these old houses, built with gables and little balconies, and with a date and the name of the builder carved over the door, once lived two boys, Jan and Peter Stein. They were sons of a thrifty and honest Flemish burgher who gave with an open hand to God's poor, of whom there were very many after the sad wars those days. There were so many, indeed, that the good burgher's own household lived very plainly, except at the joyous Christmas time, when all Christians keep feast. The children in Belgium have a charming Christmas legend about Santa Claus's pony. They always place their wooden shoes on the window ledge, stuffed full of oats, hay, and fodder for the dear Christmas pony. In the early morning, they run on tiptoe to look, and behold, the hay is all gone. The shoes are brimming over with toys and sweet treats. Then the children clap their hands with glee and wish they could only have waked up in time to see the pony munching his oats. That would have been such fun. Christmas week in Burgerstein's household was one of great plenty. And not only every friend, but every beggar that knocked on the side door had a share. There were black puddings and liver puddings, geese stuffed with chestnuts, and more than one noble turkey with truffles. And for at least a week beforehand, the little mother was busy in the kitchen, mixing the rich Walloon wafers that made little Peter's mouth water, even when he happened to be thinking of them on a midsummer day. Jan was 4 years and a half older than Peter, and he did not care so much either about the plain living all year or the stuffed geese and wafers at Christmas. He wanted to go to school at the Griffin House, and he called the old stone building, carved with griffins and dragons, for waterspouts and gargoyles and gable ends, where they taught drawing and carving and architecture, as well as other things less delightful. Now he and Peter went to school to Captain Jacoby, who asked very little money, but also taught very little learning. How could he, when he had been fighting all the time until he lost his leg? If Jan had wanted indeed to hear about battles and sieges, but Jan's heart was set upon building up in stone and marble and some of fairy dreams he had in his brain. He loved the queer old stone griffins on the schoolhouse, with the quirks in their impossible tales. But the tender-hearted burgher could never keep money enough in his purse to send Jan there, certainly not to send both of his boys. And he and Peterkin had never been separated in all of Peter's short life. No, Jan's heart sank. It was altogether impossible. "Go, boys," called their mother from the spicy, steaming kitchen. "Go quickly and bring home the red cow. She has strayed away to the marsh, but be careful, boys. Don't stay out after sunset. Remember, it's Christmas Eve." As if they had forgotten it for one moment during the day, as if their Sunday shoes were not already arranged on the tall window ledge and filled with oats and hay and grass for the Christmas pony. To Peterkin's affectionate heart, the Christmas pony was a wonderful and glorified creature. On summer holidays, when Santa Claus was busy in his workshop, fashioning toys for winter delights, he imagined the white pony, with its fiery, shining eyes and long, waving mane and tail, as free, like himself, and enjoying many an untrammeled run and caper in Paradise Pasture. Having once seen a picture of the Greek Pegasus, he confessed to his brother that he never thereafter thought of the Christmas pony without wings, though hidden, doubtless, to ordinary vision by his long silvery mane. He believed firmly that one night he had actually heard him neigh softly and paw at the wooden ledge. Both the boys were restless. Christmas was in their bones. And so they ran with delight along the frozen path to the marshes to find Kneedl, the strayed red cow. The ground was so level that they could see all around them for a great distance, and there, sure enough, was Kneedl, looking disappointedly at the withered grasses on the far edge of the marsh. She seemed redder than ever in the glow of the sky, which was a deep red, with a few dark clouds above it like smoke. "It looks like goblin smithy," said Jan. "Where they shoe with silver the Christmas pony," added Peter, laughing. He put his hands on each side of his mouth to call Kneedl home, when a sudden, sharp ringing sound, as of hooves striking on the frozen ground, made him pause, and around a small body of woods, on one side of them, came a little girl of 13 or 14 years, riding a white pony, at the sight of which little Peter's breath came quick, and his cheeks flushed. For had it not bright eyes and long silky mane and tail, and was not the bridle shining with rich metalwork? Its rider, the young girl, drew rein and checked her pony's speed as soon as she saw the boys. Her eyes were black and lustrous, and her hair was dark. She did not look like the girls of Flanders, nor was her dress like theirs, and when she spoke, it was with a decidedly foreign accent. "You are Flemish boys, I see," she said, addressing Jan, and her voice was very sweet. "Can you tell me in which direction the castle lies? I thought it could be seen anywhere in this flat country." "It is the old windmill that cuts the view off here," answered Jan. "But after you cross the marsh yonder, it is visible again. And it is not far away." "Then I will wait for the others," said the little lady. For so she seemed to be from her manner and look. "I was going to spend Christmas Eve with my godmother at the castle, and my father did not return. So as I wished very much to go, the steward and governess prepared to go with me, and they were so slow, oh so slow, that my pony ran away, and I find myself lost." But there was a ring of mischievous laughter in the last sentence, and Jan shrewdly suspected that the pony was not altogether to blame. "Is this the Christmas pony?" suddenly asked Peterkin. After an absorbed contemplation, for some moments, of the pretty white creature. "Is it? Oh, yes, it is Santa Claus's pony," she answered, with a merry glance at Jan, and eyes, lips, and dimples overbrimming with silent laughter. She evidently remembered the Flemish legend. "Come," she said suddenly to Jan, with childlike impulse. "Since I have to wait, tell me about yourselves. Tell me what you would rather have. Oh, of all the things in the whole wide world, for your Christmas gift." The children's hearts quickly fly open, and Jan was soon telling her, while she listened with her wide, eager eyes, of his dream of going to the Griffin House and learning to build churches and palaces, and how he could not do it because he could never have the heart to rob God's poor of his father's aid and charity, nor would he go without little Peter. They were talking so eagerly that another rider was with them before they noticed his approach. A tall, dignified, dark-looking gentleman, wrapped in a long Spanish cloak and wearing a plumed hat. At the sight of him and the sound of the young girl's rapturous cry, "Father!" Jan's lips closed, and a sullen, lowering look came over his frank face. He replied but curtly to their thanks and turned to his brother. "Call Kneedle, Peter, and let us go home." "Kneedle has gone, brother," and so she had, like a sensible cow, mindful of supper and shelter, and the sunset fires of the wintry sky were burned almost to embers. They had separated, and the young rider, with a hurt, amazed look on her face when Jan turned back to her and said to the gentleman, "Do not cross the marsh there. The holes are black and deep and dangerous for horses. Take the longer road around. You will be at your goal sooner and safer." "You do not like to warn us?" said the Spaniard, looking curiously at his half-averted, reluctant face. "Why?" "Who is your father?" questioned the Spaniard. Jan's heart filled with dismayed apprehension. He remembered that he had told the daughter already, however. "There is no need to tell," he answered sturdily. "I have not been treacherous to you, at least," and his eyes sought the girl's in warning. She spoke quickly, in spite of the frown on her father's brow. "No, you have been a generous foe. We owe you only thanks." There was a suspicion of tears about her long lashes, and Jan found it hard to listen to little Peter as they hastened forward. "It is strange that she should have the Christmas pony," he was saying in a perplexed tone. "Strange things always happen at Christmas," his brother answered dreamily. Next morning, a silken purse of gold pieces hung outside the window, with a scroll attached, "For Jan and Peter Stein, that they may go to the school of the Griffins. From Santa Claus's pony." Jan Stein's desire was fulfilled. He and Peter went to the Griffin school and learned all about carving and building and wood and stone. They used to plan together what they would build as soon as they were grown. Big churches, perhaps, and stately houses, but certainly a town hall for their own dear town, for the old one had been quite ruined by shells. Jan would have it adorned with pictures from its own history and with carvings of familiar leaves and blossoms and of common animals with their homely, everyday ways. The storks on their rough nests and the big dogs harnessed to the cart, these would I have, said Jan. And the Christmas pony, exclaimed Peter, his eyes kindling with the old enthusiasm. On the central tablet I would carve him, and he should have wings to show he is of no common stock, but of heavenly breed and nurture, and little panniers on his back, out of which crowd all kinds of toys, and in front a child's shoes full of grass and barley. That should be my part, and under it would only be Peterkin, for the name of the carver. Why, said Jan wonderingly, for this was only his home name. Because I shall always be little Peter beside you, brother.